Hello and welcome to Masters of Our Domain, the podcast that used to be about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld and is now about the classical world, TV shows about the classical world, or whatever the fuck we feel like talking about that week. I am Arlo Edwards and I'm joined, as ever, by my co-host Phoebe Roy.
Hello.
Hello, hello. How are we doing?
It's 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah. It's it's postman hours.
About that. It's postman hours. Well, I've delivered all my letters. I've done it.
Mm. Yeah.
I've done it. I've smashed that out of the park.
You can't see this, but Phoebe sat on her little trolley with her shorts on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this the other day, about postmen wearing shorts. Is that like the law?
I don't think it's the law, but I think it's like a thing. I think like the other postmen look down on it if you don't wear shorts.
Look at him. Look at cold shins over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here he is. It's Susan. Needs the long trousers. Doesn't want his ankles to get chilly.
I think it is kind of like that. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's like how like bits of the army where they wear their uniform in a certain way and it's like not the rule, but they sort of, it's like a convention. And if you don't do it, you're like, you're dogging the boys.
I think we had that a little bit with our school uniform. There were like...
Short fat tie.
There were things that you did with the school uniform that were not okay.
head of year 10 going down the line of postmen in the morning and telling them off for rolling their skirts up.
We were threatened with a skirt measurement system at one point.
Kneeling on the ground and they put a meter stick down there.
They're going to do sort of from the knee up, and then they just realised that would just literally just take forever. They never managed the proper ban on wearing heeled school shoes either. There you go. But if you were fool enough to either wear the blue blouse past year 7, which everyone knew was the baby blouse, you had to graduate to the white blouse. Otherwise,
yeah, what are you doing?
What's even going on with you? Yeah.
Yeah, wearing the blue blouse in year 9. What are you still playing with Polly Pocket? What's going on?
Sort your life out, blue blouse. What's happening? If you were fool enough to wear the official school blazer, I would not want to be you.
Sort your life out, blue blouse. Time. Feels like the sort of thing that a builder would say to his apprentice. Would not be able to explain what it meant.
Blue blouse is like something that a homophobic PE teacher would shout at you. Go on, blue blouse.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you, blue blouse on goal attack. Look lively.
Yeah. We're making a distinction
second time
here
this
between...
week that netball's come up.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah. Talking about netball on 10K yesterday.
Oh, no.
I hate 10, it.
10GK. How about that?
That's right. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I hated netball. Netball is the sport of fools.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not a bad, yeah.
It's not a sport. It's a series of gestures.
Yeah, you're pivoting.
You're pivoting.
You have to pivot. It's not really a sport.
If it's got the word pivot in it, then that's not really... Yeah, it's a... It's furniture removal.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's why so many netball teams went video, because they pivoted in the 2010s.
Oh, because they pivoted to video. Oh, yeah. Very good.
Yeah,
all right.
Thank you.
What did we watch this week, Milo?
We watched Barbarians Season 1, Episode 3.
We watched the Netball World Cup.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're going to review the Netball World Cup like it's the Eurovision Song Contest. Just watching it going, oh dear.
Oh.
Oh, that's an interesting approach.
I think I saw a foot move. No. Yeah. You know what I love? You know what I love about netball? About people who play netball past school? Because that's the thing. Is that no one has ever worked out how to adultify the netball uniform. So if you're an adult woman who plays netball, you're still doing it in like a bib. You're still doing it in like your little bibby and your pleated skirt.
Maybe that's how
it's not dignified.
That's how we make our first million. We do like a rebel bingoification of netball, and we do like slutty netball, And there's like, we've redesigned the outfits, and there's, you know, they're playing house music, and you can get margaritas.
I hate everything about this and everything it stands for, but it's actually a really good idea. It would be so successful.
God, the entirety of Clapham Common would be empty.
Sketball.
On a Wednesday evening. Sketball, there we go. I like the idea of getting women to self-identify as skets by attending a netball match. Somehow we've reclaimed it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then it would, I feel like it would then have to have a sort of grime soundtrack. That would be the to go with the name. Yeah.
No, I think it would need to have a kind of like pop house, like a kind of one of the big, like, open air Ibiza clubs, but not like one of the cool ones, like where you'd go if you just went to Ibiza and you didn't.
Yeah. Well, like you're going, you're playing netball, and for some reason Wayne Lineker is refereeing it.
Yeah, exactly.
But he has to have his hands tied behind his back because he can't be trusted.
He can't be trusted. Not on the skateball pitch.
I don't even know exactly what you can't trust Wayne Lineker with, but I feel like it's everything. I don't even have a specific allegation to make here. I just, in general, don't trust Wayne Lineker.
I tell you what, I wouldn't trust Wayne Lineker with. I wouldn't trust Wayne Lineker to correctly enter a postcode into the phone before a long drive.
Ooh, yeah, that's interesting. Mm. Well, there are no long drives on the island of Ibiza, of course, so maybe that's why. You'd be out of practice.
If Wayne Lineker said, "I'm just going to the shop. Do you want to get in it? Do you want anything?" Mm. I would want to give him specific instructions. If I said, "Would you get me a chalky bar and a drink?" I don't trust Wayne Lineker not to go wildly off-piste and return with like a boost and a lilt.
A boost and a lilt. Fuck me. Now, speaking of something that would happen to a builder's apprentice, coming back with a boost and a lilt really feels like one of those.
Oh, look, it's Blue Blouse.
Yeah.
With his boost Wayne and Blue his Blouse lilt. Lineker.
What, need energy, do you? Go get the stripe paint. Yeah.
You need a little bit of a taste of the tropics, do you, Blue Blouse?
Wayne Lineker, and I don't know if this reference will be too much of a deep cut for you, but I feel like it won't. Do you remember when... during
to our American listeners, look up Wayne Lineker, because we don't have time.
Yeah, he is the brother of former England footballer Gary Lineker, and they have such different vibes.
Yeah. Like,
He's a sort of nightclub sleazebag in Ibiza. And Gary Lineker is a clean-cut BBC man.
They're the British version of Chet Hanks and Chet Hanks's brother.
Colin Hanks. Yeah.
Colin Hanks, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, it is quite like that. Yeah, I forgot to mention this, but Wayne Lineker does speak in Jamaican patois. Yeah, so this, we'll see how you
cannot stress enough, he is not Jamaican. They are not from a Jamaican family. They don't have any Jamaican antecedents. They don't have any Jamaican background. That's just what he does.
It's just what he does.
Just what he does.
Yeah, him and Gary collabed on the reggae sauce Walker's crisps.
That is too much of a deep cut. Tell me what you're going to say.
I was going to say, do you remember in lockdown, there were the father and son who got massive on OnlyFans doing gay porn together. They weren't fucking each other, but they were like wanking in the same room in a way that I would argue still quite weird.
Very weird, I'd say. Very weird.
Yeah. And also I learned recently that this, because it was the son started the OnlyFans himself, and then his dad was like in the background one time, and then people said they fancied his dad. So he got the dad involved, at which point it skyrocketed and he was making like thousands and thousands and thousands a month, and he was giving his dad like £100. His dad was still working as a plumber. Anyway, this is the point I was going to make. Is that
sorry, he was stiffing his dad on the earnings
in more ways than one.
Well, that's that's somehow worse than the context. Yeah.
Shafting your own dad out of his gay porn earnings.
All right, man. All right.
I wasn't even doing that. But I mean, it's hard to, there's not really a word. Anyway, the point, what I was going to say is Wayne Lineker looks like the dad.
There actually were very few things that you were going to say, but I still didn't guess that
that was what you weren't prepared for that, nonetheless.
I wasn't prepared for it.
Pat's away. Right, we're talking about Wayne Lineker and incest gay porn. Pat's away. The mice will play.
That's right. All right. Episode three. So,
yeah.
Catch me up to where you and Pat got to in episode two. I did watch it, but just tell me what your vibe was. What you're thinking?
We were discussing how it was quite an interesting portrayal of the relatively dispassionate way that the Roman Empire operated in order to just achieve its like concrete aims. And they did quite a good job of portraying the kind of like guy turns up. He's like, look, this is what I want. I have no interest in doing violence to you, but I'm very happy also to do violence to you if the things that I'm asking for don't occur. And the way in which like the Romans were very happy to sort of adopt conquered peoples into the Roman fold insofar as they were prepared to like toe the line. And that was quite interesting with the whole Ari storyline and like him being adopted by Varus and becoming like a Roman tribune and all this kind of stuff. So
all this gear.
Yeah, we were kind of, because I think that's something which if you've not like studied classics extensively is not as widely known, the kind of like ways in which a lot of people sort of just became Roman. And sort of adopted the biggest thing about the Roman Empire was they were trying to get people in the tent pissing out. That was that's quite an interesting, and certainly not all empires have operated in that fashion.
Sure. And it's obviously a great contrast with the Greek city states who were more keen on tents full of piss.
Yeah. My modern analogy Pericles, was the French versus the Belgians.
Belgians pissed everywhere.
Tent full of piss.
Piss tent.
Yeah.
Piss tent empire.
Yeah.
Piss tent empire full of blue blouses. That's my take.
God, they were nasty pieces of work, the Belgians. Bloody hell.
What, the Belgians? Oh, yeah, really nasty.
Yeah.
Really, really awful.
Yeah.
That's the official position of this podcast. And, the Belgian Empire.
On top of it, they were Belgian.
Yeah. Didn't even have the grace to be a more elegant.
Yeah. Not like a, not exactly a great world power, are they?
Belgium.
No.
They are even in the, you know, in the rarely cornered market of different coloured beers.
Yeah. Sort of monks making an 8% beer. They have cornered the market in that.
They love a different coloured beer.
Little
curly
pissing
buildings.
Boy. He was pissing
curly
in a tent.
Curly buildings. Who's pissing in a tent? Little pissing boy. Curly buildings. Different coloured beers.
Do you know what the little pissing boy is called? The mannequin piss.
Is he?
Yeah.
I was trying to think of a name.
He's not a man, but he can piss.
He's not a man, but he can piss. He's a mannequin. He's a little man.
Yeah.
He's a little tiny man.
Yeah. That'd be fun if they just had some CNA clothes on him. Because he is a mannequin.
Label the price.
Yeah.
I thought you were sort of referring specifically to him being a little man.
Yeah, guys, I presume.
Guys wearing CNA. Wearing their first formal wear from CNA.
CNA. It's very funny going to the continent and discovering that they still have CNA. It feels like such a relic of the British high street 25 years ago.
It really does. I didn't know it still existed on the continent.
Yeah, because it's German. They just retreated from the UK. They were like, it's not worth it. And a Tammy girl, they still have on the continent as well.
Of Fanta. Do they?
Yeah, and Etam.
Oh,
Etam and Tammy go
the same
thing.
Well, Etam is the woman to Tammy girl's girl.
I'm done with these Tammy girls. I need an Etam woman.
Well, Tammy girl is where you get the netball uniforms, but no one's bothered to upgrade it in Etam.
We've got to pivot to Etam.
I'll tell you what. If I could get my hands on some Tammy Girl classics, I would be a very, very happy woman. That was my absolute go-to when I was about 11.
Do you remember Tammy Girl? Your mum would take you in there, wouldn't she? She'd get your netball uniform.
You'd get your long flowery skirt. You'd get your short stripy top. you get your fluffy pink jumper with short sleeves. And then, you know what I saw the other day? I saw a girl, she can't have been more than about 18. She was dressed exactly like that. Exactly like how I used to dress from Tammy Girl.
There you go. Little bit of a 11-year-old girl Peter Kay there.
Look, he's run into ground. He's got to find some new material.
Do you remember Polly Pocket? She was the only woman with pockets.
Remember friendship bracelets? if you didn't have 10 of these bracelets up your arm, everyone would think, oh, she's got no friends.
Do you remember Scooby Doo?
She's
Scooby-Doo's?
Got no friends because she's not spent a weekend plaiting thread together. Why are these friendship bracelets? What represents the friendship? Is it the friendship between the threads or is it the friendship between the bracelets that no one told you?
No one tells you.
No one tells you.
Yeah.
You remember Nerfs? No, me neither. Nerfs.
They were for boys.
They were for boys.
Well, you weren't allowed in there.
What were those massive water pistols called?
Super Soakers.
Super Soakers. You remember Super Soakers? Again, me neither. They were for boys.
Now we're crossing into potential actual Peter Kay bit. Do you remember Super Soakers? Oh, do you remember Swing Ball? Yeah. I feel like actually, do you remember Super Soakers feels very Vernon Kay coded, which is like the same accent. That's Vernon Kay at 10:30 a.m. on Radio 2. Oh, I had a Super Soaker when I were a lad. Great fun. Great fun. Jeremy, did you have a Super Soaker? No, Vernon. I'm 60. Most of the toys I had lead in them.
That's such a talk radio phone as well. Like, tell us the most dangerous toy you had as a child.
Oh yeah, now we're really in Vine territory.
Now we're really cooking.
I know that we're not on the topic yet, but I fucking love and I would recommend this to any of the listeners. Listen to the last half an hour of Vernon Kay's Radio 2 show because he gets Jeremy Vine, because Jeremy Vine is the next show. And Jeremy Vine and him will have like a sort of 15-minute overlap chat where they talk about what's going to be on Jeremy Vine's show. And Vernon Kay is so desperate to be Jeremy Vine's friend. And Jeremy Vine is like so equable yet disinterested at the same time. And it's amazing. It's like he's so the alpha in that relationship in a way that one morning I was listening to it. And Vernon Kay was talking about The Shawshank Redemption, which again, extremely Vernon Kay topic.
Great film. Great film.
Great film.
Top film.
Beautiful
top film.
Top film,
that.
It's,
but best
it's not
film
just
ever made.
Film.
They're not made that, make them like that anymore.
Yeah. And then Jeremy goes, you know what, Vernon? People always say it's great, but I've never seen it. He's like, what do you mean you've never seen The Shawshank Redemption? Jeremy, you've got to come over. We'll watch it. Me and you, a couple of beers. And then he goes, all right, who else is coming? He's like, no one, Jeremy, just me and you. He's like, all right, I'll think about it. And then just completely moves the conversation off.
All right, okay, again. So, again, for our American listeners, this is real. This is real bottom of the Brit ephemera barrel, who yeah. Vernon Kay is. So, okay, what I want you to do, right, is
I think
so
we have
Vernon
talked
Kay,
about him before on this
I
show.
Think we have
yeah.
as well. But if you don't remember, he is a TV presenter, former comedian, former model, and TV presenter. And he is married to Tess Daly, who
he's
is also a TV presenter. He is a himbo. But what I want you to do with him and Tess Daly, what I want you to imagine what these two people look like is, okay, so you get two seals,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'm not kind of like your common garden variety seals, like glamorous, glossy, sleek seals.
To know what your garden's like.
It's full of seals.
Bloody seals in the house again.
Bloody seals everywhere. It's weird microclimate.
Gotta keep them off my pot plants.
We get some amazing... amazing wine, but you know, but the downside is the seals.
Yeah.
So you get these two sleek, glamorous seals, right? You get a spoon, and you get the seal to look at their reflection in the spoon, and one of this couple looks like the reflection in the convex side, and the other one looks like the reflection in the concave side of a seal.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I want you to picture when we talk about Vernon Kay and his wife, Tess Daly.
Yeah, yeah. And also Vernon Kay back in the day used to have the kind of haircut that a sort of 17th century British monarch would have.
It's an Oliver Cromwell haircut.
Ooh.
He's got a protectorate haircut.
What? I'm Lord Protector.
Goes into the salon. Can you give me a Lord Protector today? No. I'm fed up with the royals. They think they can do whatever they bleed and like. No, give me the Lord Protector.
You know what? The royals, I'll say it, they've got a cavalier attitude.
Ayo. You know who else had a cavalier attitude?
Who?
The Roman army. Commander of the legions, Varus.
Yeah, he sure did. Oh boy, he did. In more ways than one. This episode, I have to say, it was dark as fuck in the most literal sense. Like, I could not at any point visually see what was going on, which has not been a feature of the show so far. Previously, the shots on the show have been quite well lit. And then it's like they remembered that it was a Netflix show, or they had like an electricity bill that they couldn't pay and they got cut off or something. Because it suddenly gets pitch black for an entire episode. And conveniently, it's also the episode with the most confusing plot. It's just a lot of people running around.
Just to make things a little bit more confusing.
It's a lot of people running around in different bits of the forest. They're introducing a lot of new German characters who are all dressed the same. And it's sort of like there are various factions appearing within the Germans as to who's betraying the Germans to the Romans and who's not. But the basic thrust of it is that Arminius / Ari, the German chieftain's son who's been raised in Rome and turned into a Roman army officer, adopted son of Varus, has been sent along with this centurion guy to apprehend Fölkvin.
Can you explain something to me? Because I've sort of lost track a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Fölkvin, what is his relationship to Beowulf? Are they just pals?
So Beowulf is like, so Fölkvin is a member of the tribe that Ari is from. And Beowulf is the leader of like a different neighboring tribe.
So Beowulf is a Reek.
I believe so, yes.
Because Beowulf and Fölkvin, again, look really, really similar.
Yeah.
Like Beowulf looks like Fölkvin, mediated by Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
Like if you kind of passed him through the Brendan Fraser machine.
Well, they
like they have in like they have in The Fly, but it turns you into Brendan Fraser and not a fly.
In Germany at the time, before you went to the courts, they liked you to go through a Brendan Fraser mediation process first. Where he would just make sure that, you know, the various attempts to, you know, amicably resolve it had been sorted. But then he was cast
last
in...
Last word and accountability processes.
Then he was cast in The Mummy and he no longer had the time. So a lot of these disputes did get a bit nasty after that.
It's a Brendan Fraser process. It's a method of making ammonia.
Very good. What is actually the process for making ammonia? Because it does have a weird name.
I think it's isn't that the Haber process?
Yeah, that does sound right. You say, isn't that the Haber process, as though it's something so obvious that you think I'm asking you a trick question?
Well, no, that's what, that, no, that's why I said Fraser process. It made me think of the Haber process. And now I'm wondering whether that is how you make ammonia or if that's something else.
No, that does sound familiar. And I do remember learning about it in GCSE chemistry, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah, me too. Long time ago.
It was actually in the year 9 AD. So Ari goes to the village. There's a whole, because we've got Segestes, who Pat and I talked a bit about last time.
He's a real sack of shit, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a real what the Australians would call a rat cunt.
He's a rat cunt. He's a real fuckhead.
Yeah. And because we were talking about how his last time he was like hanging out with Varys, and he's like kind of scheming his way into like Varys putting him in charge of the tribe, and Varys keeps calling him Barbare to like not mask his contempt. And then I was like, the thing is, he sort of hates him because he's a barbarian, but he talks to the other barbarians with much less contempt because he sort of sees them as like at least worthy adversaries. But him, he's like, you're a little bitch. And you are kind of useful, but I hate that you're a little bitch. And the Roman equivalent of you is a guy I would hate. And so I think that comes across. And interestingly, we do have a bit in this episode where the centurion who's been sent along with old Arminius, he at one point one of the Germans comes and finds him in the forest, and he like grasses up where the Germans are, because he's like, well, they've gone to this place where it's like we're not allowed to go there because it's where the dead live. And then they're like, thanks for the information. The centurion just kills him, and he's like, he's like, fucking hate a grass.
What'd you do that for? What do you do that for? So what I think is all right. So this is like an important part of Arminius's personal journey, because again, no spoilers, but I think we've got a sense of where this is going. I think it is a little bit weird, because we have a little bit of like scene setting and situating where the centurion is like, oh, you were that guy, I thought you were just like Varys's like kind of fancy little dancing blood boy. Like, I didn't realize you were like an actual, I didn't realize you were like a real head in Roman terms. I didn't understand. Like, oh, now I respect you. So up until this point, Arminius has presumably done quite a lot of fucked up stuff in the name of Rome, because that's how, you know, that's how you earn your stripes. It seems a little bit much that you're being expected to go along on this kind of hero's journey with Arminius, where he is starting to look a bit like, maybe Rome does stuff which is a bit fucked up, because he sees he sees like that this centurion kill this German boy for basically no reason in quite a horrible way, because he kind of puts again like the violence feels like it's really ramped up.
Is this from the first two episodes?
No, you're referring to the bit just now.
Yeah, the bit just now. Yeah, I was going to say, because the first episode, he also, there's like a young boy who he hits over the head.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The boy gets like bonked over the head.
Merely disabled.
No. This is when they invite the young German boy to share the fire. Then he says, "Fulquin's gone to the Dark Land," and then he puts a knife through the back of his head.
Yeah, pulling the old Gerard Butler.
Yeah, he Gerard Butlers him.
Yeah,
not cool. And Arminius is like, "What the fuck would you do that for? That's mate." But like,
he's
presumably,
like, I've got to save the president.
But presumably, he has seen his comrades do similarly fucked up stuff, and has probably done similarly fucked up stuff himself. And it seems a bit of a reach that all of a sudden he's meant to be starting to kind of have a bit of a think about. Unless you're honestly supposed to buy that the issue is that because these are the people that he grew up around, or these are his people, that suddenly he is able to put himself in their shoes and doesn't think
it's
cool anymore.
I think that's what
it's
supposed to be, and I don't know how realistic that is, but
it's not terribly sympathetic, is what it's not.
Yeah,
that's the thing. It's not. I get what they're trying to say, but it's also a bit like,
I think something that's quite hard to necessarily know the answer to, and Pat and I were touching on this a bit last time, is the way in which the Roman perception of what they were doing in somewhere like Germania, and also their relationship with like violence and conquest, I feel like is so alien to how we would conceive of it, that it's quite hard to really grab onto and to know what they would, because there is, because something we talked about a little bit last time was sort of like the the impact of just being like a slave society and what that does to your relationship with violence in general as a society. And sort of you kind of wonder like how fucked up does it seem to the average Roman soldier what they're doing? Or does it seem completely normal? You can't really tell. Yeah.
I mean, I suppose there's something to be said for the fact that it's not really structured by any, I suppose it's structured by the ideological grounds of the glory and primacy of being a Roman. Mm. And because the idea of being a Roman is mutable, it's not like the Greeks where either you were a civilized person or you were a barbarian.
Yeah.
You can transition from being a barbarian into being a Roman. It's a mutable quality, and one which is seen to be a kind of desirable quality. You want everyone to be to get involved, to go under get in the tent, everyone in the tent.
Because also even in the mythological history of Rome, it's like it very much is initially like a city state, and then they gradually conquer outwards into Italy. So almost there were almost no Romans to start with, and so like the whole
piss out.
Yeah, yeah, it's sort of like an immigrant society in a way.
Yeah, that's what is said to Aeneas when he visits the underworld.
Piss out.
You piss out, mate. You piss out.
Yeah. Yeah, because
he meets Marcellus, who's like, you piss out.
Yeah, and of course Achilles says, you know what? It's horrible being dead. I'd rather be the lowest slave among the living than be the king Belgian. Of all the dead. But or be Belgian, yeah. But what
Belgian
I will say is, I fucking hate camping. So I'm quite glad that there's no camping involved. And what's even worse than being dead is being in a tent that's got piss in it. So if I were to get, because there's no escape, you're lying on the floor, you're in the piss. So if I were to make one recommendation to you, Aeneas, it would be always piss out of the tent.
See, the thing is that you probably think that Milo is doing an extended riff from what we were talking about earlier. But actually, if you knew the language, you would know that this is actually very, very similar to the content of Aeneid Book 5.
This is like the woke translation of the Odyssey controversy.
This is the exact translation of Book 5. So if you're a real Latinist, this is something that you would be able to enjoy and appreciate. We have quite a lot of stuff like talking about the mytho-history of Rome. We've got quite a lot of stuff about the wolf, and the wolf is coming. The wolf is going to devour, presumably, Arminius is the wolf.
I don't know.
We have a bit with Varus telling in the Romulus and Remus story about how the wolf saved Romulus and Remus. I wrote my master's dissertation on the origin of the Romulus and Remus myth. And I actually can't remember whether it would have been like part of the national mythology by the early first century. I think it might not have been, you know.
Oh, that's interesting. Kind of I don't later, know about this.
It was a later edition. You should read my MA thesis, and that'll have
all the information.
Spoilers,
but it's not called Ream, is it?
There is a theory that Remus is a sort of mistranscribed name, and the original name for Remus was Romus.
Oh.
And that's why it's a kind of odd. That's why it's an odd name.
Romus and Little Romus.
I mean, like sort of, but it's also also kind of partly like the story is like kind of partly mediated through the practice of like Hellenistic ethnography, because they were big, big keen on explaining who peoples were and where they came from. So it being adopted by Romans themselves from these Greek sources is, I think, a surprisingly late a surprisingly late thing, but I can't remember exactly when, so I would have to go back and have a look at it. It's quite interesting. It, like, it's an interesting topic because it's
interesting
because it's so told as the kind of the, but it's also the second founding, because there was a sort of putative Rome pre Romulus and Remus, which is what is founded by Aeneas. But the but this idea of like the twin brothers, like it comes from all different sources, and there isn't any real evidence for a Romulus and Remus story much before the Hellenistic ethnographers started to be like, okay, so this weird lot of like Italian farmers, what are they up to? Well, we've got to give them some kind of explanatory story, ideally back formed from their name, because that's sort of our whole thing, that's how we do it.
Backronym.
You have a people, they were probably founded by like some guy, so it is quite interesting, but we've got a lot of that. But this is I think as a way of bringing in the story about the about Thusnilda's little brother, who is now disabled, but has been identified as having had some kind of seer ability awoken by it, by the kind of local wise woman. You can tell she's a local wise woman because she's got the gunge on her face. She's got the wise woman gunge. She's had a run-in with Dave Benson Phillips.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is that, again, much like...
someone has got their own back on this wise woman.
Much like Brendan Fraser, actually, Pat Sharp was also involved in resolving disputes in ancient Germania. And sometimes you would get gunged.
Well, American listeners, you know what? It's just... in the show notes, we'll just write you a list of things that you need to go and Google, because we don't have time.
There's a show called Funhouse hosted by Pat Sharp. That's all you need to know.
It's all you need to know. Yeah, so what I was going to say was about the kind of the ideological structure of Roman expansion. I wonder whether it's sort of easier to understand, not admire, but easier to understand when it's being structured in a very specifically kind of religious manner. So if there's this idea that religion is a civilizing force, and so it's okay to enact this like kind of terrible violence on the people that you're, you know, expanding into, because it's like part of the kind of process of civilization. But I'm not sure that was a specific, certainly not a religious concern. I actually don't know. And of course they wouldn't have written about it, because it presumably wasn't a kind of any particular significance to them.
And this is interesting also, I think, in a meta sense for the listener, which is that like I think a lot of the stuff in the ancient Greece and Rome is so opaque because it's so long ago that even when you have an undergraduate or like a master's degree in it, you still don't know half of the shit, because the way that they conceived of the world was so utterly different. That even just simple things like, you know, and in this show it's supposed to be like 9 AD. They're not thinking of it as 9 AD. Like to them it's what, fucking 782 years since the foundation of Rome. I think that was how they counted it. So even just basic
AD,
things like
who's
that.
D?
They're not even conceiving of time in the same way.
Ab urbe conditor.
Anyway.
The thing is that studying the ancient world in any way, all it really does is enables you to know what to ask.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you any answers at all. It just gives you more. It just, like, the more you learn, the more interesting questions you are able to ask.
Yeah. And you can do sort of podcast riffs.
Exactly.
Thing is, everyone's gone soft. Throw them off the Tarpeian rock. Stuff like that.
stuff of this nature. Yeah. This is all, you know, this is also the second time this week that Dave Benson Phillips has come up, so I'm really on a roll.
I thought you were going to say the second time this week that the Tarpeian Rock has come up, and I'm not sure which of those two is more obscure or a more outdated reference.
Well, because the original plan for Get Your Own Back was that disgruntled children could have their parents and caregivers flung from the Tarpeian Rock by Dave Benson Phillips.
But then health and safety.
Health and safety. That's the 90s.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was a different
If they'd made this show in the 70s, then...
Thrown off the Tarpeian Rock into a big, like, foam pit. Like those people who jump out of hot air balloons or whatever.
By fucking... What's his name? The guy from Blue Peter.
Richard Bacon? No. Longer ago.
Richard Bacon wasn't presenting Blue Peter in the 70s.
No, sorry. That was just the first man I thought of when you said a man from Blue
Peter.
Richard Bacon. You're going to make your parents do cocaine off a tortoise. There you go. There's an opaque reference.
I'd actually forgotten that he'd done it off the tortoise.
Well, I should say Richard Bacon admits doing cocaine, but he denies doing it off the Blue Peter tortoise. That's the official
Bacon
stance.
Well, I think that's fair enough. That's a really horrible thing to do.
No, I think it's cool.
Don't involve the tortoise.
I don't think it would have done any harm to the tortoise whatsoever. I think the tortoise would barely noticed.
Do you promise?
Yeah, they've got...
Do you promise no distress was...
If your shell can't withstand a line of coke being done off it, it's not much of a shell, is it? You're not gonna survive in the wild with that attitude.
Well, it's interesting because the line in Mr. Brightside about coming out of your shell and feeling just fine is actually about being a tortoise with a Blue Peter presenter doing cocaine off it.
Well, he was brought out of his shell by doing cocaine. It gave him a bit of confidence.
Exactly. That's the point I'm making.
Yeah, the confidence to start his own business. And the thing is, you know, tortoises, over a lifetime, they've got a lot of time to hustle because they do live fucking long.
Yeah, I mean, but this is the thing, like, you joke, but you heard of a little company called Uber? Well,
wasn't started by a hare, I'll tell you that.
By that self-same tortoise.
Yeah, correct.
So, think about what you're doing with your life.
The very same.
The very same tortoise. Am I thinking of Peter Purvis?
Oh, yeah, Peter Purvis. Don't be blue, Peter.
Don't be blue, Peter. That's what I'm thinking of. That's what I'm thinking of.
He was at the height of his Blue Peter fame.
God, Pat's going to be furious if he finds out what we were talking about.
Pat would be loving
what
this.
We're talking about. We would be in so much trouble with Dad. Yeah, I'm just trying to think of like what the other like kind of important sort of plot highlights are. So basically what's happened is Ferquin is on the run. Arminus has been sent to kind of flush him out. He gets told that Ferquin has sort of gone to the Darklands. Ferquin gets betrayed by the fellow Reek who's given him sanctuary. So like the wenches, like kill some of his pals. Like Beryl gets killed by. Hate when the wenches. All my wenches betrayed me. Top 10 wench betrayals.
These wenches ain't loyal.
Yeah. The wenches have unionized against me.
Gavania has fallen.
Wildcat wench strike.
Wenches is a fuck. 1,024 dead Romans.
I don't know what that means, but okay.
I don't know either.
Okay.
It's a tweet.
I assume it means something.
Sound off in the comments if you could parse that.
Yeah. Can you, here's a nice challenge for you. Can you translate for us any of the stuff that we say?
We don't know.
We're just talking.
It's like a Chinese room.
We're just
in our minds.
Bebopping and scatting.
Yeah.
So Beryl... Brendan Fraser gets done in by their host tribe's Reek, and he gets told like, oh, the gods are not going to be happy. So we've got a little bit of like much more of a kind of introduction of the mystic into this episode. So we have much more of an idea of like how the barbarians are conceiving of the gods and the supernatural. The little boy, the disabled little boy, has been adopted by the wise woman after his mum tries to kill him. His sister goes and saves him, and then the wise woman's like, oh, I'll adopt him. And then she's like, yeah, like, kiddo, what do you see? And he's like, oh, I see some shit. And he gets, because he gets kind of led away because he starts talking about how the wolf is coming and the wolf is going to devour everything. At the funeral of Falkwyn's family, who Arminius has helped to cut down from where they've been crucified in order to give them a decent burial.
Great Segestes little bitch moment there, where Arminius turns up with like a sort of Roman division, and then he's like, right, let's cut them off the crosses now. We've had our fun with the crucifixion. And Segestes is like, actually, Varus said we should leave them up there as a message to everyone else. And he's like, shut the fuck up.
Segestes is a fucking dickhead.
Are you wearing the fucking tribune hat? Do you see a fucking horse under you? No.
I don't see your horse, Segestes. Yeah.
Why is Segestes the only one who's like dressed like Friar Tuck?
Interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. He's certainly not a merry man.
He is not a merry man. He's the opposite. He's a grumpy man.
Yeah.
Robin Hood and his grumpy men.
Fucking less Sheriff of Nottingham
again. Less successful.
Yeah.
Less successful in his...
Leave it out, Marion William. I'm trying to watch the football.
Oh, Marion's moaning at me about putting the bins out.
Do you remember the Armstrong and Miller show?
Yes.
And they had a recurring sketch, which was very stupid, but I did enjoy it, which would just be... you would never know when it was coming. There would just be a normal sketch going on, and usually something dramatic would be happening, and then someone would go, fuck, forgot to put the bins out. And then it would cut to a shot of them chasing the bin lorry down the street with a wheelie bin or whatever. But there was one where they started, as the seasons went on, it got like more and more absurd. And they had one that was set in like the Dark Ages. And a guy goes, fuck, I forgot to put the bins out, as he's in the middle of some heated conversation. You see him holding a wooden bucket of like gong and running down the street after a horse and cart. And that's what I'm sort of imagining.
In Robin Hood and his grumpy men.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
Well, it was tricky for them to get the bins collected because they didn't pay council tax.
Well, this was what the original poll tax riots were about. What Tyler missed bin day one too many times. What Tyler, this is the problem. He could never get it straight which day was main bin day and which day was recycling day.
Oh yeah, and you don't want to get
and
that
he
right.
was just he was pissed off he was proper yeah. he was proper pissed off
guy in 1389 about... He's like, why do I have to separate out the wattle from the daub? What's the point? It all ends up on fire on a beach in Turkey anyway.
Yeah, good. I think there's some mileage in that. We are running a bit close to time, so maybe next week.
big rivalry. You've got your wattle guys and your daub guys. In the 1300s.
That's the 14th century equivalent of bibs and skins.
There's a netball uniform.
Playing netball.
Wattles and daubs. One group of women dressed in sort of straw Hawaiian skirts and the others just covered in shit. It's medieval netball.
That's how they played netball.
Yeah. Throwing a big cabbage through the hoop. Of course, they hadn't invented pivoting then, that game later. You had to face where you were facing. That was it. It were bloody difficult.
I love most the games idea ended that in a just stalemate. Like one of the things that they didn't have in the medieval period was just turning round. Once you were facing one way, that was the way you were facing forever.
Yeah. Well, you could turn around, but you had to sort of go around the block. You couldn't turn on the spot like a Subutio man.
Yeah, well, that was an Enlightenment invention. People don't realise this. No turning round on the spot.
When David Hume invented Sabutio. It announced the start of the Industrial Revolution. Now look at this here. I've created a dervish. I'm presenting it to Louis the 14th.
Oh, goodness me. okay. So also Thusnelda is supposed to be a seer. She gets described as a seer, so presumably this is going to come back up. She's sassy. She's a sassy seer. Mm. She is the little doll in the Polly Pocket sassy seer.
She's singing Chandelier.
Barbarian Polly Pocket. Oh, because, see it. Yeah, no, I get it. Sorry.
Remember when she got done for pedo baiting?
No, I don't.
It was all with the chandelier video. I can't remember the details of this now, so maybe I'm garbling it a bit, but a bunch of people were saying that Sia was too young and also deliberately looking too young, but also being sexual in a way that was like encouraging paedophilia. Now that I'm saying this out loud, it sounds insane.
It does a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's just had a child called Somersault.
What? You can't do that. You can't. Look, it's very rare that I say...
You can't be doing that, Sia.
...that sometimes we should go back to the Spartan ways and leave children on a hillside. But I think in that case, you can't come back from Somersault.
It's not Somersault's fault, though.
That's true, but...
Surely it should be Somersault's parents that have some kind of Spartan punishment.
Yeah.
Visited upon them.
I feel like Sia wouldn't survive on a hillside for very long. Not in that leotard.
Well, she can't see through a fringe.
You really do need your peripheral vision.
She won't be able to see out for hazards. Mm. Also, she's very medieval in her thinking, so she won't turn round.
Yeah, yeah.
Segestes stops Thusnelda from following the Romans who are off to kill Ferquin, by the way, because Thusnelda is sassy. Just in case we'd forgotten that she's supposed to be sassy. She keeps doing sassy stuff. So we assume that something is going to befall the Reek who betrays Ferquin, but Ferquin runs off to the dark lands. Thusnelda curses her mother for trying to kill the little boy. The centurion, after he kills the young barbarian boy, after he betrays Ferquin, he says, I love treason, but I hate a traitor.
It's a quote Julius Caesar. This is so like a conversation you and I would have if we were two Roman soldiers. Well, you know, as Julius Caesar said, don't hate the player, hate the game.
He didn't say that. What are you talking about? Now, okay, so this is interesting.
As Antonius Costa from the band Cerulean once said.
Band Cerulean. Fuck off.
Mark Anthony Costa.
Mark Anthony Costa from the band Bronze.
Yeah. Ironically, Anthony Costa was kind of he was the Leopardus of Blue.
He was the Leopardus of Blue. Oh,
now that is the kind of gear you'll only get on this podcast. It's not many people who are going to like or get that. But if that's you, you're fucking stuck with this shit. Sign up to the Patreon. This is a Patreon one. Thank you for signing up to the Patreon. Please continue, because you're not going to get that gear anywhere else. Let me tell you that. No one else is capable
really
of that riff.
You really are not. You really are not. I think this is quite fun. This is I love treason but hate a traitor. This is
sort of the opposite of hate the sin, love the sinner.
Yeah, literally the opposite. I cannot find an earlier source for Caesar having said this than Plutarch. So this is a lot later, and it's not in Plutarch's Life of Caesar. It's in Plutarch's Life of Romulus. So whether or not this would be a kind of known Caesar quote at the time.
Mm. Well, they didn't have access to brainyquote.com then.
No, he did not. And really what he meant of it, because I'll be honest here. Caesar did a lot of talking a little bit.
Mm.
a little bit on the fly. He was a big improv guy. He just said stuff.
Yeah.
When Caesar, said stuff, he wasn't necessarily assuming that that there was some weirdo writing down everything he said.
Stop writing down what I said.
I'm just spitballing.
Yeah.
Motherfucker, are you taking notes on my Gaulish spitballing? Don't do that. What if someone thinks that I actually said that? Go back one. I'm going to say something cooler.
Gaulish spitballing is the racket sport taking West London by storm. All the bankers are at it.
Wenny weeny weekend. I just said that. I don't know what that means. It's. Can you delete that and I'll say something cooler? Yeah. I want to go back to the beginning and I'll say something cooler. Something more fun.
I've seen loads of people going oh, you came, did you, mate? And I'm like, not like that. Come on, we're better than
not
that.
Oh, come on, you're childish.
Yeah.
I really feel like I deserve a less childish legion at this stage in my career. So Fedoquin is hiding in the Dark Land, right? And then the Romans have shown up to kill Fedoquin. But then Ares no, I'm going to turn on you and I'm going to kill you all, like in Gladiator. And he saves Fedoquin, and Fedoquin's why'd you do that? And he's like, oh, because, you know, we're pals. We're pals from when we were kids. Wanted to. And Fedoquin promises to sacrifice his firstborn in exchange for help for the gods helping him take revenge. When has that ever gone wrong? I feel like, you know what? I'm not a seer, unlike Thusnelda and her little brother, but I'm guessing that him promising to sacrifice his firstborn is potentially going to come back on him a bit later.
Well, because obviously Agamemnon's school tour of the dangers of sacrificing your firstborn to the gods hadn't made it to Roman Germania yet. He was going around primary school sports halls going, look, I've done it, and let me tell you, it's not glamorous, right?
It's not worth it.
You think it's going to be fun, right? Older kids, they're going to tell you it's cool, okay, to sacrifice your eldest to the gods for the victory. But let me tell you, it's a hollow victory that you win.
You seem a smart lad.
Yeah. And you come home, and your wife murders you in the bath.
Why are you hanging around with these losers? Get into kickboxing. And then he tells you to have a kind of special code scratched onto your bike, and then it's not going to get stolen.
I do a lot of work in the community in Mycenae, because I just don't want all the lads going down that path. I don't know why I've made him Scouse. It just felt right.
Why is he Scouse? Agamemnon's anti-gang charity, I think, has legs. I think there's a certain amount
of legs,
but you're right,
Pol Pot.
It's not reached Germania, so no one has told. So Fedoquin, again, like Caesar, he's riffing. He's talking off the top of his head, and whoever's nearby is like, oh wait, oh no, I wouldn't say that if I were you, mate. He's like, well, I've said it now. I can't take it back. I look like a dickhead.
Yeah, it's like buying a car on finance. Your wife's like, what if you, that's 20% APR? What have you done that for? It's a depreciating asset.
Exactly. Exactly. You can't sacrifice your firstborn on finance. Yeah.
Your wife marching you back to the temple going, no, we're taking it. He can't afford it.
He didn't ask. He didn't check with me. He didn't check with me first.
It's not valid.
And then he's sort of making kind of ball and chain motions behind her.
Don't make me get the Citizens Advice Bureau involved, all right?
And then sort of looking at the Citizens Advice Bureau, it's like, okay, citizen, we know about that. Advice, yep, fine. Bureau, having trouble with this word. What does this mean? French, what's that?
Yeah, gotta go further south for that, mate.
Gotta go further south for that. I think that's everything that happens in this episode. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying this show.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. It's good to portray that. The fact that the Romans speak Latin is fun, and I think, honestly, no other show has attempted it.
Yeah.
Apart from when those about to die did it for three lines, and it was really fucked up.
And then it was a character who wasn't. Oh, no. Sorry, you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking of the Megalopolis.
Yeah, I was about to say that as well. Yeah, Megalopolis did it as well, didn't they? That was
when
factor.
Adam Driver just like speaks Latin for like... Oh, no, it's not Adam Driver that does it, is it? It's fucking...
It's Giancarlo Esposito and his daughter.
Yeah.
It's really... They are doing it a bit Italiano, but I'll accept that.
I'll accept that. Yeah, so, I like that they're speaking Latin. I like that it is made... actually like explicitly apparent that they do not understand each other and they literally have them speaking different languages, and the only person who is the two people who are effective go-betweens are Segestes and Arminius, both of whom can speak both Latin and German. And I think that's like, yeah, it's like really well done, and it's the only, and I think it's the only show about the ancient world that I've seen doing it.
Yeah, what you learn in Latin for, to be a grass?
They normally just have everyone speaking the same language, and you're supposed to understand that the Romans are speaking in Latin. So actually having them speaking Latin, I think it's fun. I think it's a good stylistic choice.
And fuck, it must have been a big job.
Yeah.
That's so difficult to achieve. So respect to... That's very German, though, I feel like. Again, something which is not perhaps obvious to listeners is that the Germans are really into classical scholarship.
Yes.
In like a big way.
Yes. Well, actually, I will probably talk about this next week a bit, but I've got an interesting fact about German classical reception and the figure of Arminius. But we can talk about that next week. I can talk about that next week when I'm with Pat.
That's a teaser for
when
you.
When Dad's back. Week. Exactly.
Yeah.
So next week. Next week is me and Pat.
It's you and Pat next week. I think we did mention this, but due to the time zones, it's only possible to have two of us at a time. So we're tag teaming
indeed. Yeah. So this one has been Just the Lads.
Yeah.
Pat and Milo.
It's just the Lads
fellas.
Every week.
Pat and Milo is Just the Fellas, and then me and Pat is Just the Daddies.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is how we're framing it.
I'm the filthy little sub of the podcast. What's fun, because I edit the episodes that you and Pat do, and I'm on these two versions, and what I can say is we're now doing three different podcasts, which I kind of like. the subtle changes in energy, like it's like the graph where you mix together the primary colors and what happens, like. Yeah, a Pat and Phoebe episode, a Milo and Pat episode, and a Milo and Phoebe episode have many commonalities, but also many differences. They produce different overall pictures.
And this was the original function of the Haber process. It was to mix different presenter energies.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Either way, it produces ammonia. This this podcast smells like a hairdresser's shop. Tracy's handed you a copy of Red Magazine, and she's going to do you a perm. Right. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being a Patreon subscriber and joining us in the elite hairdressing salon that only the patrons are allowed in.
That's right.
And for sniffing all of the hair, putting that little cap on that they pull your hair through with tweezers.
They don't do that anymore.
Do they not do that anymore? That's a shame. I've had that done to me once. I'd frosted tips when I was about 12.
Not on purpose, but I'd had that done.
They're like, yeah, we have to make it like Hellraiser first.
I had it done. I had to pay for it, but you know.
Yeah, happens. Yeah, put your head in the old hairdresser's swimming cap.
Put your head in go on, pinhead.
The hairdresser's Johnny.
Let's frost you.
Frost me up. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what happens at the start of Hellraiser. It's a frosted tip. It's gone awry.
It's about the dangers of frosted tips.
It is, yeah. It's about looking at the members of the band Five and being like,
Yeah.
I could vibe with
that. They're overworked. Let me tell you that.
Yeah, they've reformed. There's going to be a
wow.
There's going to be a big Five tour. I almost lost the head in the middle of the night when I was out with the baby. I was like, I'm gonna get tickets to go and see Five, and then I was like, what are you talking? No, you're not. Don't be ridiculous.
Speaking of things they were fucking talking about on Vernon K, let me tell you, Five have reformed. Unfortunately, the dog has died, so it's just.
Five of them. And they were the.
They're having
they
to
were
get
the five bad boys with the power to rock you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and obviously Enid Blyton has died as well, so they're having to get Dan Brown and James Patterson to write the songs now. But
Five Bad Boys with the Power to Rock You is one of the less successful of the famous five books.
Yeah, yeah. Five Go Rocking You Again.
Five, What You Waiting For? If you want a 3-3-3-2-2-1, let's do it.
Yeah, yeah. For American listeners, band five. Just Google it. There was no F. They spelled it with a five.
Just Google it.
Making their just name Google technically it. Five-Ive.
Five-Ive, yeah.
Yeah.
And then one of them left, Sean left, and then they were, but they still called themselves Five.
Or if you're Roman, their name was 5-4-E. Thank you.
You done?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're done.
I think we're done.
Yeah, we're done. If you're in Melbourne, please see my show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.